Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe, Aki, Bree, Jacob. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Right.
I'm alive. You know, that's cool, I guess.
Indeed. Bree, how's married life treating you?
Pretty darn good. Like, we can now that we both have rings, we can, like, reach across the room and, like, fist bump, like, Wonder Twin powers activate, but, like, you know, married powers activate.
I was about to ask if you take on the form of, like, a bald eagle and, like, he becomes, like, a bucket of ice water.
Yeah, I don't know that we've gotten that far into it, but yeah.
Okay. I mean, well, you know, you're married now. There's plenty of time to explore.
Yeah, totally.
So how's things? How's your week?
I'm excited for this weekend. I'm going to, like, the farmer's market for the first time, around town. And there's, like, a May Day Fairy Fest, in the town nearby. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Aki, what are you up to?
Mostly playing review games. You know me, I have no life.
Yep.
I watched Turning Red today. And that was amazing.
That was a really good movie. I cried.
I did not cry, but I did cringe so much because I remember so much of that as my childhood. And then the two people I watched it with, one of them did not like it at all. And I'm like, that's fair. And then the other one was like, it was okay. It's like, okay, that's fair too. I mean, that's what happens when you watch films. Some people just don't connect with the stuff going on in it, and that makes sense.
Yeah, that movie, like, I mean, granted, there's a lot that I can't relate to because obviously I'm not a woman, but
Asian.
What's up?
Or Asian.
Or Asian, yeah, no, that's also true, but, like, the family dynamic, and stuff like that, honestly, like, I found the end of the film to be very therapeutic.
Very, yeah, it was nice.
And, yeah, it's, yeah.
So, I like that, and that was, other than that, I managed to mow my lawn today, the entirety of it, in one go. It was nice.
Nice.
Took me an hour and a half. And now it's done, and in a handful of days, I'm going to be dog-sitting a dog, so that's going to be something.
It's kind of weird if you're dog-sitting a cat.
I mean, I've done that before, too. I've dog-sat kids before, you know, it is what it is.
Jacob, how was your week?
Pretty much non-existent. It's just been work, video games, family. Wash, rinse, repeat, you know, it,
yeah.
While also dealing with, you know, our capitalist hellscape.
Fun.
Yeah.
Are we just going in the news then? If this is just our week?
Sure.
Well, I mean, did you want to talk about your week or no?
No, not at fucking all.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. I didn't know if anything like positive had happened.
No, I told you about my week. You're the only one.
Oh, yeah, no. I know, but that was like the other day. Like,
oh, no. That's still the only thing going
today?
Through my head.
Okay. Just alrighty.
24/7 through the brain.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right.
It's movie watch.
There.
Are you serious?
Resident Evil trailer. Jacob, tell us about it.
Okay. So with the that Krieger's Resident Evil trailer from CinemaCon has finally been released, and holy crap, does it look really good! Now
you're the only one I've heard call him Krieger.
I've heard it both as Krieger and Krieger.
I've only heard Krieger. Like Krieger, I think is more German with an I in there.
I don't know. I've heard both, but okay. So Krieger. Zach Krieger. Okay.
Whatever.
Anyway, whatever. Anyway. So anyways, like, you know, there are some Resident Evil fans online who are like, this is real Resident Evil, blah, 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 blah. But it's just like, shut up. This looks awesome. Like this trailer.
It looks like a good zombie film, but it doesn't really look like a Resident Evil.
Well, the thing is that it's like a side story to everything. And so, like, I don't think we're going to see any of the main characters in there, but...
I don't want to see any of the main characters. We've seen them in all of the movies. Give me something different. I don't want to see Leon show up in this. Please, I don't want to see Leon. I don't want to see Chris. I don't want to see Claire. Yep. Give me something new and different, and this looks new and different. And it looks scary.
I wouldn't mind seeing Michelle Rodriguez in it.
But she wasn't. She wasn't.
You just want to see her. That would happen.
Yes, I do.
Watch Fast and Furious. I don't know.
But and like, if you want to, the script is it is online. It's on Scribd and it's on the Internet Archive. I'm currently reading
You're ruining it for yourself.
Nah, not really. Like, because to be honest, I don't know when I'm going to get to see it. And if the movie is half as good as like what I'm reading so far, like having read the script won't even matter. Like, there's going to be like a, like, it's just, yeah, it's going to be awesome. However, I would like to say this is the first time in a script I've ever seen this much self-awareness of the fandom for whether it's like a video game or an anime or a book, anything like that, like self-awareness of the fans, because there is a note in here after a certain scene that happens in parentheses, everyone who's played the games will jizz their pants here.
Oh God.
That is in the script.
This is gonna either be really good or fucking hell.
I think it's gonna be really good. Terrible. I think it's gonna be so good. I can't
wait. Poor Acolyte thinks it'll be a decent film, but a bad Resident Evil film.
That's what I think.
All right, yeah, but that's such a friggin' low bar.
The thing is, when I saw the trailer, I was immediately thrown to Resident Evil 4. Just being in the middle of nowhere, going to a house, and shit going wrong. Like, you're not up to a mansion, you're just a weird-ass house, and things go crazy. And
yep.
I'm not big into horror movies, but I'm on board for this one. This one looks really good.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna see this in IMAX.
And that shot of like the legs coming out of the door in all directions, like, holy fuck, what that was awesome. The Christ?
That was the singular best shot of that entire trailer. Oh, and that's the scene that made me say, okay, yeah, I wanna watch this.
Like, that is the kind of stuff that should have been in the Silent Hill sequels. Like,
Acolyte saying, I don't mean in comparison to the other Resident Evil films. It might be a really good film in comparison. I think it'll be a great film in comparison, but I still think it'll be a really good Resident Evil film. I think we need to just forget what we know about the Resident Evil films and let this do its own thing.
Yeah, I'm in agreement.
Because let's be real. They've had how many reboots of the series, they've had how many sequels of the series, they've had animated versions, they've had computer animated versions. Like,
the animated ones are fantastic.
The
animated ones are meh.
The lore, you need like a fucking, the dude from Always Sunny with the board and the wires.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's like, they're side stories that are just like, oh, okay, like, I don't know. They none of them have done, like, I own all of them. None of them have done anything for me. like the live action films, like the original series, like it might as well just stop existing after the third one. And Welcome to Raccoon City was in, it was just there. Yeah.
See, I liked all the Mila Jovovich Resident Evils. They got shitty and stupid, but it was still fun.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're entertaining action films, but I don't know.
They weren't Resident Evil by the end. They were its own weird thing. I don't know. Did you want to talk about that Immortal Kombat film?
Yes, I can. So, we have Mortal Kombat 2 coming out. It is next week. Yeah, shoot. So Mortal Kombat 2 comes out next week. Now, for all those who were listening last week, I was gauging whether or not I was actually going to go to the movie theater because Regal does that $5 mystery thing. But on Reddit, there's somebody who definitely works for Regal, and he'll post like this random clue and people will have to figure out what it has to do with whatever the mystery movie is. And somehow they figure out, it's the RZA's One Spoon of Chocolate, which, to be honest, that movie looks pretty damn cool too. But, so thankfully I got to save my $5 for next week. So Mortal Kombat 2 comes out, and for all of you who have been watching films for forever, you may remember The Asylum, who makes Mockbusters, similarly titled films that, you know, are there to confuse people or, you know, yeah, sure, whatever. It's probably close enough. You know, so instead of Pacific Rim, you have Atlantic Rim. Instead of Transformers, you have Transmorphers. Speed Racer even got one with Street Racer. Like, they do all this kind of stuff. And next week, we are getting Immortal Kombat, which I've watched the trailer. Obviously has nothing to do with Mortal Kombat.
Nothing.
If anything, it seems more like...
It looks like the deadliest Condemned.
I was about to say, it's the Deadliest Warrior mixed with the Condemned. Which, honestly, like, you know, if I could find it for $5, I might still watch it, even though I know it's going to be absolute crap.
Yeah.
Because The Asylum has never once made a good film.
No.
yeah. So if you can't go see Mortal Kombat 2, there's always Immortal Kombat.
Yay. Well, let's keep the bad news going, because we got normal news to talk about this week, not just movie stuff. Greedfall, Steel Rising, and Technomancer developers Spiders have been dissolved after not finding a buyer. They are officially dead. They are dissolved. They are gone. Most of their 360 games are backward compatible, with Bound by Flame and Fairy Legends of Avalon still being available to buy. Mars Warlogs is playable if you owned it, and if you could get a disc for it, of Orcs and Men is playable from Europe.
Yeah.
So Spiders, gone.
I'm sorry, what was the one that you said you needed a disc for?
Of Orcs and Men.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, Europe only.
I think the DLC for Greedfall, it says, should still be distributed by Nacon.
Yeah, they said any DLC should be from Nacon, and if anyone has any questions about things, contact Nacon, because they don't exist anymore.
Yep.
That was their Facebook statement. We won't exist. Contact Nacon. It's a bummer. I really like Spiders. They were solid dev.
Yeah, it makes
double A dev. A lot of Eurojank, but fun.
Such good Eurojank. A fucking fantastic group. It's such a shame that they're gone.
Yeah, let's hope Cyanide can keep the love alive with Styx. They were kind of connected.
Yeah, I'm a little worried because I know there were three different groups within NatCon that were all scared thanks to this, and the Styx devs were also one of them, so I'm hoping that this is all the bad news we're going to end up getting, and the other two will still be okay, but I don't know.
I think Cyanide's going to be okay mainly because of their non-RPG stuff. Like, they're the ones who do the Tour de France series, and those always seem to come out like clockwork every year and do well in Europe. So, Tour de France might keep them afloat.
Hopefully, one can hope so.
Yeah, we'll see. Bree, any notes on your end on spiders?
No, just, I think that the Nacon has filed for insolvency, which that is, you know, what's causing all this. And I hope that other devs can find new homes so that they don't end up in the same predicament.
I was really hoping someone would have stepped in last minute to pick up spiders.
Yeah.
If I were a millionaire.
Yep.
That's what I'd waste my money on. But no, we need yachts and jets and ballrooms for D's nuts. Mm. PlayStation is having a lot of rumors and speculation over their DRM. Officially, PlayStation's stance with this week, there have been people locked out of games. And their apparent new line of DRM is like this. When you buy a game, you get a 30-day license for it, and you must connect online to activate that license, and it becomes a lifetime license. If you do not connect online and you stay offline, that license expires in 30 days, so you can't just refund it.
Yeah.
They've apparently been getting nailed by refund spam and refund scams, and they are fighting back, and people are getting upset because it's DRM on their purchases, which I think it's hilarious that they're the ones who are getting caught with DRM on their system after the whole, hey, we'll just give you a disc on the PS4. Suck it, dicks. You're the ones who started it. Now you get to eat shit over it, too. I say good for them. Good for them. They should have been upfront about it. They shouldn't have let the audience find out that this was a change happening. They should have told us ahead of time.
Yeah, but and it's only happening to ones that you buy after that date. So anything you bought earlier doesn't have the DRM attached to it at all.
It would have been after 30 days there anyway. So,
well, people have actually gone in and tested it, though. So anything that you bought before that month... which I think is this month, doesn't have that DRM on it at all.
Yeah, because that's the change they made that they should have told us about.
Yep.
Yeah. It is weird. It is odd, but according to them, as long as you connect online once with that license, it is yours for a lifetime and you never need to connect again. Don't know. Last bit of news I have is the monthly games for PlayStation Plus were announced for next month, and it's, hi, Potato, what the fuck are you doing? Okay, just jump up, alright. they're getting EAFC 26, Wu-Chang Fallen Feathers, and Nine Souls. There are people upset that it's yet another Souls-like, yet another sports game, and yet another Metroidvania, which is also a Souls-like.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Nine Souls is amazing, so they'll get over it.
Wu-Chang and Nine Souls are both pretty solid, and FC's good for the fans, but it is, like, they're getting the same shit every month, it feels.
Yeah.
But at least they're getting good shit, even if it is kind of the same stuff. They're at least getting good versions of it, so there's at least that.
Potato, if you jump behind my monitors, I am not getting you out. Like, you're going to stay back there until someone else comes in to get you. So you're going to want to go up above the monitor and onto the bed. That'd be really nice. Thank you. Love you, Potato. Aki, any news?
Nope, I am newsless.
Bree, what you got?
Power Wash 2 getting a Star Wars DLC this summer.
Oh, yeah.
Jake is cursing under his breath.
No, I forgot about it, but I did see it, and I was like, "Oh, this is looking pretty cool." So
yeah, pretty I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, you get to wash like X-wings and stuff like that. That looks awesome.
You know what else Star Wars is hitting?
What?
Monopoly.
These nuts.
No, Monopoly.
So
Ubisoft's Monopoly.
I have played the actual like tabletop Star Wars Monopoly, and I played it for 24 hours against another human before we both finally gave up and declared it a draw.
Wow.
But we played for 24 straight hours, and that was the only time I played Star Wars Monopoly.
Why? Winner. Why would you do that?
Why not? I don't know. We were both very stubborn, apparently.
Did you take a nap?
No, no. We were drinking, too.
Were you dating this person?
I not hope at my the mic time, picked no. up that ring.
Ooh.
It did.
Scandal.
Yeah, our doorbell is a cowbell.
Oh.
Silence my phone.
Does that mean your food's finally here?
I think so.
What did you order?
That would be awesome.
Sheets an hour and 20 minutes ago.
That's not good.
Slow. No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah. All right. Sega announced a Jet Set Radio remake is in the works.
I think they announced that a while ago.
Wait, yeah, hold on.
We're talking about it more today.
Like when you say remake, do you mean like the one that they've been working on, or is this like a remake of the very first game?
I have to go back and find the post, but it was, they were talking about the music and, you know, the hype behind it, and they're hoping that the music is going to transport people back and also, you know, be fresh and new and exciting and get that same vibe. So yeah, that was the first I had heard of it, but yeah. Popped across my
head. I mean, granted, I have no idea how, I've never once heard of this person, so take this with a grain of salt, but apparently there is going to be a remake of the first game alongside of the reboot that was already announced.
Nice. That would be cool. A Brazilian coffin manufacturer is making Mario-themed coffins along with other nerdy styles. You can choose from Mario, Luigi, Yoshi, Toad, and Princess Peach.
I wonder how long it's going to be before they get a cease and desist.
Cease and desist, yeah.
Because you just know that shit's coming.
Yep, yep. And then my last bit of news is kind of just like a personal commentary. I dropped down from Game Pass Ultimate to Game Pass Essential. I'm going to be trying that for 3 months to see whether I miss it or not. If I miss playing some of the games, I'll go back up to Premium next, but I'll let y'all know how I feel about it later on.
I dropped from Ultimate to, I believe, Premium, and I realistically didn't even notice a difference.
Fair.
I may have found a little bit of news. There are rumblings that we might know the next Tales game getting a remaster.
Ooh.
Peggy seems to have leaked that a game was being worked on for the Switch, and we know these seem to hit Switch, PlayStation, and Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Tales of Eternia.
Ooh.
That was the PSP one.
Yeah.
I've never played that one.
Was Tales of Destiny 2 in North America.
Oh.
We need a remake of Eternal Sonata.
Mm.
They could just add that to the backward compatibility program and I'd be happy.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, but then they'd also have to add in the two characters that PlayStation got that Xbox didn't.
Why would they have to do that?
Because that would
they
be
were
nice.
Never on Xbox. Why would they go back and reprogram
because
a
20-year
nice.
Game? It would be nice.
But it would be technologically impossible in this day and age for them to update the original game.
I know, which is why I'm saying just give us a remake.
Never gonna happen. I wish it would.
It might.
My cold breakfast pizza sucks.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Bree, any other news?
Nope, that's it for me.
Jacob, any other news?
Magic the Gathering Arena developers have unionized. For better layoff, remote work, and Gen AI protections, saying that recent decisions by Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro have not aligned with the value of their employees.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
And Wizards of the Coast is like, we're reviewing this. Of course, we love all of our employees and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, we're going to see how we can work to improve this. They're scared. Anyway,
they should be.
Also, everything that has how do you pronounce it? Denuvo?
DRM?
Yeah.
Everything has now been cracked.
Yep, that doesn't shock me.
Yeah, I heard they found an exploit which pretty much cracked everything.
Yeah, they did.
Nice. Good.
And the only other bit of news I have is TV news that Atom Fall is getting its own TV show.
Huh.
Ooh, interesting.
I'd watch that. I could
get into that.
Why are my cats hissing? Oh, well.
You had lots of snakes?
No snakes. All right, any other news, or are we just shifting into reviews now?
Shifting into reviews.
Okay.
Yep.
First game tonight is Kiln, developed by Double Fine Productions, published by Xbox Game Studios, provided to us for the purpose of this review by Xbox. Thank you, Xbox. Jacob, say thank you.
Thank you, Xbox.
Bree, say thank you.
Thank you, Xbox.
Released April 23rd as Xbox Play Anywhere, PS5, and PC for $19.99. An online multiplayer pottery party brawler from Double Fine. Grab your friends to assemble a team of colorful spirits and sculpt ceramic battle armor on a pottery wheel. The size and shape of your pots determines their playstyle and abilities. Work together to douse the enemy's kiln. Jacob, Bree, both of you covered this. Jacob, start us off. I know you played this with your kids. What's going on in Kiln?
Well, I tried to play with my kids, First off, I would like to say my kids and I really like this game, but we were also super disappointed with it because this is an online-only game, and it's only one person playing at a time. So my kids were really hoping that they could either, like, co-op, you know, like, work together on it, or face off against each other offline. Not going to happen. So that was a little disappointing, but yeah, you play as this like little spirit thingy, and you kind of make like this protective shell around you that is going to be like a clay pot, or it could be a vase, however you want to say it, bucket. Like I forget what all the other different
there's eight different shapes.
I was gonna say it's like eight or nine, yeah. But the point of it is that some of it is related, like you have to balance, how much health you want your guy to have versus how much water carrying capacity you have, because how this works is that you're playing these 3-on-3 matches where you're trying to, douse the enemy's, kiln. So, you know, you have, 3 rounds to do it, or not 3 rounds, but, you have to score 3 points to win the game. But at the same time, like your pottery shell around you, is also used so you can beat up your opponents, and you have various power-ups that I never quite figured out how exactly they get assigned to you, because like you could have like a pot that was,
it's based on your pot shape.
Is it? Because, like, I felt like I had various shapes that were, like, the same exact thing, and, like, I had different, like, special secondary abilities. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know what I'm doing.
I thought it, yeah, I think it was eight, each of the styles of vessel had their own, like, there was a sword slash, there was popcorn, right, which I think you use to like stun your enemy.
And there's like a tornado. Hammer.
Yeah. And there's a thrust. I didn't come across all the different types in my play, but yeah.
But, you use that to beat up your opponents, and, it ends up being like a pretty zippy, and satisfying 3-on-3 game. We've only played it with the moderated.
I thought it was
4v4. You're right. It is 4v4. I don't know why I always think of it as 3-on-3. Because, yeah, you're right. It's definitely not. Yeah, it's 4. Weird. But anyway. Crap. Oh. So, yeah. So, you're starting up your match. Run across. You know, either dump water in the kiln or you protect your own kiln. Yeah, you have a blast. Like, we've been using the moderated ones because I wanted to try to keep it, you know, safe for my kids and their online interactions. So I don't know if you can talk to other people if you don't form up a party, but that's what we were doing. And, you know, after the after each one, you know, the group departs and then you get on to another one. I never had any issues finding a game, and I don't think I've ever run into a bot. I don't think so, but yeah, like it's been fun so far.
Yeah, I think the matchmaking worked really well. It's really easy to get to like make a team with your friends to get your own lobby. You can see recent players and send them invites. If someone's acting unusually with lag or like inappropriate somehow, you can report them from the main social tab.
What do they call it? It's like report.
Pot. Yeah.
Report this pot.
Yeah. And the settings allow for you to like press versus hold for some actions. You can adjust sensitivities. You can invert controls and you can remap your controls.
Yay.
But yeah, the other thing I would mention is you start out with like a limited amount of things, whether it's like a skill or a color of glaze. I'm trying to think of actual pottery terms here as I'm skimming my notes. But you, as you complete battles, whether you win or lose, you get points for the battle that go towards your rank, and you unlock fun decorations for your pots, like stickers and different glaze colors and pot handles and styles. And when you get to like level 6, you'll have unlocked all 3 different sizes for your clay. There's different tools that you can unlock when you're making your pots, like smoothing stones and sponges. And that's all like in the first 10 levels or 10 ranks that you build for playing matches. It had a cute little like story to it as well. We're like the spirit Jacob mentioned, and we're helping Celadon, who is like the potter god or something. You know, you get to start off making your spirit to your liking. I have like a little purple blob with legs and sparks for eyebrows. And then there's a really good tutorial that shows you how to inhabit and abandon pots with your spirit so you can move around them. And then there's like a second tutorial for making your pots. I thought that was pretty good. And you get like a shelf with 3 different pot styles that you have ready for you in battle. So when you go into battle, if you die, like you choose, you can, or maybe you see like your team members have done something different or they're taking a different tack than you would. You can switch up your pot style. So you can have a variety of different styles and sizes and shapes and stuff on your ready shelf. Don't forget to customize. Basically. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a lot of fun.
And you can tell some people that have been playing a little bit longer already have like certain ranks so that they can have these absolutely giant pots with like giant hammers and smash around. And then there's like some power-ups on the map.
Is this going to be one of those things where if you're a newcomer and you get thrown into a game with a bunch of veterans, you're just screwed?
No, I think it's pretty balanced actually. Cause I ended up with some obviously like, you know, more skilled, more, you know, further into the game in my first match. And I still did pretty good. I just learned to be small and like fit into small spaces instead of worrying about some of these big heavy hitters that were defending their base and stuff. And like one of the things you can do besides getting smashed, you can actually repair your pot in the match if you find gold. So you can do like the kintsugi, the Japanese art of joining broken pottery with gold. So you get like little gold flecks in your pot, and it's really pretty. And
I tried like, doing that, and it never worked out for me.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I was just doing it wrong or like you have to get to a certain level to be able to repair yourself, but I was just never able to get that done.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a pretty complex game. The creativity is kind of just limited by your imagination and then like unlocking stuff through the battle ranks, if you will. Some good stuff. I would say the controls are pretty intuitive. And again, it's really creative. Matches are pretty quick and matchmaking works great. A couple not great stuff. As of right now, there's a limited number of maps, which is good for memorizing the maps, but bad for being like repetitive. And maybe they'll add more in the future if the game takes off, which I hope it does, because I had a lot of fun with it. Sometimes I felt like there was a few collision detection issues, maybe some like online lag issues. So the game might need a little bit more polish after data comes in from players to really like seal it and polish it and make it good. But yeah, this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's definitely... Oops, sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say one more thing. I wasn't sure what to make of this game when I saw the videos. Like, it was clearly a unique concept, but, like, would it actually work? I know. Double Fine has this thing every year where they do, like, a game jam for a week every year and see what wild ideas... And, like, anyone can propose an idea. Even if you're not like a standard developer, you're just like someone who works in the mailroom, like you can pitch a game concept. And that's what they do during this whole week or whatever. And this game came out of one of those game jams and got turned into a full game. And I just think that that's like really cool.
Very cool. Well, if there is nothing else to say on this, should we talk price?
Yeah.
Sure.
It is a $20 game. There is also a Fired Up edition that comes with a Battle Hardened decoration pack for $29.99. What are your thoughts on everything?
I'll let you go.
Honestly,
first, right?
$20. I think it's a great deal. Like, it's a fun multiplayer game. I think it was a very unique take on. Take on it. But you know, aside from hoping that they're like, I would hope that eventually like there's offline multiplayer or something that's developed for this. Like, I, when you see the scope of the game, I kind of get why there isn't, but but for $20, like, holy crap. Like,
yeah,
this is a lot of fun and you get a lot of, like, there's a lot of stuff to mess with. Hopefully we get more maps, as Bree said, and yeah, like it, this one's staying on the Xbox for a bit.
Yeah.
Both for myself and my kids.
They gave us the Fired Up edition with the extra content, which was actually really cool. You have like this, like Viking horned helmet kind of thing. And this whole like, glaze to it and like different handles and spikes.
The warrior attachments are pretty good.
Yeah. They were really fun. Yeah. So I would even say it's worth that. I thought the price was great for this. You have so many pot options. You can play this for like a long time to come. And I do hope that this does well and they continue to add content like new maps. It's an absolute delight to see other people's creations too in the main lobby that you can hang out in and make your pots. So I'm going to go with a buy it on this one for sure. Try it on Game Pass if you're not sure after hearing this.
I was just going to say, if people are on the fence, it is part of Game Pass and people can give it a go. Let me double check something quick. Give me the game page. It is part of Ultimate and PC. I wasn't sure if they throw it on premium or not, but this one is Ultimate and PC for Game Pass. So there you go. All right, moving on. Adorable Adventures, developed by Wild Sheep Studio, published by P-Cube. It released April 30th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Adorable Adventures is a relaxing third-person exploration game where you play as Boris, a curious baby boar who must learn to use his nose to reunite with his family who were separated after a forest fire. Across rolling meadows, sun-dapped forest paths, deep caves, rocky highlands, identify scents and follow trails to learn more about the world around you. Search for your brothers and sisters, uncover secrets, and expand your library of smells against the backdrop of a gentle and heartwarming story. Aki, tell us about the smells you encountered in Adorable Adventures.
Oh, there's lots of flowers, some mushrooms, and oh yeah, shit. Literal shit. Yay!
You didn't have to start with that.
Hey, I didn't. That was the third thing on my list.
For an E-rated game, you didn't need to start with that.
It was the third thing on the list, and it is something in the game. It is what it is.
It's so called in this, scat.
Actually, I'm pretty sure they call it poo in the game.
Okay, fair. But,
So in this, you play as a young little boar named Boris. There is a narrator that pops up every now and then talking about Boris, especially when you find something new or get to a new area. He tends to chat a little bit about what's going on. And you're trying to find your mom. Immediately upon finding her, you're like, oh, you can't get into this. Basically, it's the shed where she is because you're just not strong enough on your own. So now you have to go find your siblings. And while you're looking for your siblings, based on the sense of smell, other smells start interfering with that. So you're like, oh, I have to go find the things that make this scent so that I can get familiar enough with it to ignore it. And that ends up being what a good chunk of the actual main gameplay is going around finding every plant here and various amounts of them. Some of them only require you to find like 5 of them, other 7, some significantly more than that. And basically you just go up and it says interact. You click that, Boris sniffs it, and the number goes up. Now you can't go back and smell that one to increase it again, so remember which ones you smelled. Or do like I do and just pick it up and place it right next to the next one you want to smell and then just start bringing them all to that one. That way all of them are in one place to make your life a lot easier. But you have to smell a certain amount of them to be able to ignore it. Usually that's 3 or 5, I believe. And you can keep finding them after that and smelling them in order to complete your knowledge of what that is. Usually it's like 7, 9, or I think 14 is one of the higher ones you find. And when you do that, you get a little reward in the booklet, basically, that you open up, and it ends up being some sort of accessory for Boris to wear, be it like a flower on his head or a wreath of flowers around his neck as a necklace or something like that. And poo is one of them. I have not unlocked that yet, and I'm not sure I want to. Right now, mine's actually wearing a glowing mushroom as a hat, and it is super cute. Whilst you're going through this and you're learning all the smells and finding your siblings, you occasionally find races which require you just to run through these circles created by butterflies, and it does have a time for you to beat. Most of them aren't too hard. There is a little glitch in the game right now that can make it kind of a pain in the ass a little bit sometimes, and that's sometimes while you're running, your character just suddenly freezes in place like they're running against a wall until you let go of the run button and then push it again, and then usually it takes off after that again, and that can happen up to a few times in a race, which can screw up your ability to beat the time that you're trying to beat. And every time you beat a time, you end up getting an achievement. There's also little missions where you can find this camera around and you're trying to get it in a general location of where a photo's been taken to recreate it. Those ones were really hard for me because I don't see well, and I'm really bad at that, as I found out. There's a few other different types as well that you can find around. I don't want to give them all away, but basically after each and every one of these, you get an achievement, which is really nice. Obviously, while I was playing it, the achievements weren't listed as live. It was set to where you could get them, but you couldn't see what achievements were, so I have no idea how far into the actual game I am, but I feel like I've finished almost everything. And yeah, you end up going through like 7 different areas, I think, and finding your 6 siblings that you need to get in order to get your mom out of this area. I have gotten all of them. I'm just trying to clean up all the other miscellaneous little stuff to get achievements before I go and free the mom. So yeah, this is a really cute game. When you're running around, Boris is doing his darndest to run, and you see like he often has trouble gripping the ground, so you'll occasionally see him and he's just struggling as you're making like a tight turn, so he ends up like drifting because he can't catch the ground properly to run, and sometimes he'll roll over and then just take off after running in place a little bit, trying to catch the ground. It's so cute. It is adorable. You can find some miscellaneous stuff around that. It's basically trash, like a pair of sunglasses you can find, and he equips them, and it's super cute. There's a pacifier somewhere that you can grab, and he'll equip it into his mouth too, and it's also cute. I absolutely adore this game. It is truly adorable. And yeah, any questions?
Not really. Is it adorable?
Yes, extremely.
Is it an adventure?
Yeah, it's a couple of adventures.
So it lives up to everything that it advertises itself to be.
Yes, it does. Very much so.
Very good.
Would you say it needs more car? Would you say it needs more car chases and gunfights?
No.
That's good to hear.
Interesting. Interesting.
Very good to hear. Yeah. $20. What do you think?
Totally 100% worth it. This is great for all ages, for all people. I think everyone should buy this. This is that adorable.
Cool beans. Any other thoughts?
This is probably one of the cutest games I've ever played. And while it may not be one of my game of the years, it is the cutest game of the year by far, and probably of the decade. So there's that.
Jazzy. All right, let's move on. Next up is Urban Jungle, developed by Kylet Games, published by Assemble Entertainment, released April 23rd, Xbox Series X and S and PC for $11.99. Urban Jungle is a charming and relaxing sim game that invites you to transform ordinary apartments into a lush green haven by placing delightful plants with savvy. But no worries, you won't have to deal with watering or pest control. The plants just need a good spot, and that's enough to create the comfiest and coziest home of all. Oh, and don't forget to pet your cat. Bree, what is Urban Jungle?
Sorry, I was just eating wedding cake.
I'm Urban glad Jungle. Someone got to eat something good tonight.
Yeah, it's the last of the cake. Sorry, your food wasn't good.
Beef jerky waiting that for sucks. Me for afterwards. That'll be fun.
All right. So yeah, the game starts out in Staring Bangkok in 2015, and our main character is not loving her corporate life. So instead, we reminisce back to when life was simple, and we start out in 1996, where we could play with grandma, and we move forward through time a little bit at a time through key locations in our character's life. And the story is mostly told through conversational text boxes and environmental storytelling. You'll occasionally get some choice points in the dialogue, but they didn't seem to have much bearing on the story. It's things like whether you stay silent when your mom's talking, or if you go, yes, ma'am, or, you know, whatever. And you have chapters or scenes that you play that have no time limits and very minimal goals. The game is really about peaceful play with plants. You have an environment like a bedroom, and you get several plants to choose from. And each plant has different likes and dislikes. Some like water or sun, others not so much. Some plants don't get along with other plants, like African violets hate ficus plants, and cactus don't like ficus or monstera plants. And based on whether you place it in sunlight or shade, or near water sources, which you can often move in the scene, you get a point value for your plant in increments of 5. So if you move things around just so, you can really get a lot of points out of each plant. Like, you'll get a range of, like, 5 to 30 points, say, if you hit, like, all the stuff. sometimes you might be able to get free plants, but you need a certain amount of points to do so. Other times you need money for plants, and you can complete tasks in the scene to get coins. So you might have things to do like pet the cat, or turn a lamp on and off. You might also find things in the scene to get coins, like finding teddy bears or other household goods, putting folders on the table, or moving your roommate's stuff around, stuff like that. And then I came to a task to unpack some boxes while in a memory scene for dorm life. And I realized that some of what this game reminded me of was unpacking. Not just directly because of that, but because of the environmental storytelling. In this case, the main character is reliving these moments of what made her happy, and she unpacks her stuff, places some plants, pets the cat, and we get a feel for who she is through her stuff and the places that she lives and works. And this game also reminded me of something like Cloud Gardens, You have strategy to placing plants that allow you to place other plants. You'll find that you can move different water and light sources to help you plant your indoor garden. And with both of these games, as well as Urban Jungle, you don't have any time limits or big goals to meet. It's just relaxing and meditative. A little bit of story revolves around our best friend from college, our brother, who we have a shaky relationship with, and of course our mom. And they'll call us on the phone when you reach a certain amount of points or like just certain, I don't know, points in the level, basically. And conversations are short but impactful in storytelling terms. Between the stuff and the conversations, we actually get a fairly good slice of life for our characters. And you have a plant diary to fill out that will remind you of the different likes and dislikes of each plant, as well as stickers of the variants you've discovered. And there is an achievement for collecting all of them. And when you go to select your plants, you'll see if there it's a new one or not, so you can kind of easily go through and you don't have to memorize what you found and are missing and that sort of thing, which is really handy. And once you've put down enough plants or moved enough things around to get points, you'll fill a bar that will allow you to progress past the scene and onto the next memory of the story. There are some odd controls, like you use Y to turn things on and off. Use triggers to rotate the scene, and then both triggers together moves you from one floor to another when applicable. And then you use the D-pad to select between plants or lists of things, and pushing in the sticks for different tasks was also one of the buttons. And then, but like everything was clearly labeled and easy to find, so the controls worked really well. Sometimes I felt like the cursor was a little slow though. I would also forget that the cursor was on something selectable when I meant to pick up a plant from my inventory, and then I'd pick up the object in the room instead, and that took a little getting used to. I felt like the quick indicators above the plants were easy to read, and the labels like sun and water and likes and all would, you know, just, it has like little, like a little drop and a little sun symbol. Those were really easy to read, and just kind of quick gauge, what you're doing and how many points you're getting for what things and where to move plants around. There's also a creative mode you unlock where you can just play around with the without the minuscule amount of pressure from the goals in each chapter. And I had a great time with this one.
It looks really relaxing. I saw the
really
ID team play this and it was really just chill and
very
love it. Love it. There's a 250 DLC for it. Did you get to check that out at all?
I didn't get to the brother's story, but I'm looking forward to playing through that. I think any more story they could add to this is great, and I think you should totally go for that if you have the opportunity.
All right, well, let's talk about the game itself. It clocks in at $11.99, so $12 on this one. You could spend, was it $12.49, and you get the DLC episode for basically 50 cents.
So yeah, do $12.
$12. What do you think of this?
The DLC. Yeah, this game is great. If you like things like unpacking and clown gardens, I think you're going to really enjoy this. It's inexpensive. It's got good storytelling. It's relaxing and thoughtful. I'm definitely giving this a buy it, and go for the DLC too, please.
Very good.
You'll want to play more.
All right, let's talk about Until Then, developed by Polychroma Games, published by Maximum Entertainment, released April 23rd on Series X and S for $19.99. In a world still recovering from catastrophe, Mark Borgia and his friends navigate the joys and woes of another year of high school, wake up in a typical teenage bedroom, practice piano, race to meet homework deadlines, and build and burn relationships as you reminisce about the daily insecurities of high school life. That is, until a fateful meeting sets off a chain reaction upending Mark's life. People disappear and memories prove unreliable. Uncover a hidden truth with Mark and his friends in this narrative adventure and race to unravel the mystery before it's too late. Aki, what is Until Then?
Okay, this is a walking sim visual novel styled game with some mini games in it. In it, you play as Mark, and you just are doing slice of life activities, going to school, all that fun stuff, being a perpetually bad student by, you know, cramming everything literally like 10 minutes before the deadline and stuff like that. You know, my entire high school life, I think, and most of my university life for that matter. And some weird stuff starts happening. And people are getting deja vu, and the world seems to be shifting on its axis in some way that no one really understands. And then suddenly the day reverts. Well, not the day, the week, the years, the decades. You slowly move through the game, and eventually Mark grows up, and then you're right back at the start of the first day. And Mark's like, what? What just happened? And he starts feeling more and more deja vu as he's back in high school, university, whatever this is supposed to be. And more and more of this stuff keeps happening. People start disappearing. He sees people die occasionally. He starts seeing people actively disappear into static and just vanishing out of nowhere. And he ends up working with his classmates to figure out what's going on. And by working with them, I mean they're working on it and he's continuing to be a bad student. This is mostly just a slice of life. He is just walking around and chatting with people and, you know, just relaxing while they're trying to figure out why the world keeps resetting itself, but it's not resetting itself exactly like it was. Things keep changing. Not always big changes, sometimes it's small stuff, but it's always a change. However, as more and more resets end up happening, the world around them starts to degrade. Everything starts falling apart. You know, one of the first things is like the train system is down for repairs. It broke down before the day that was reset, so it's in the past. Your character doesn't know anything about that and is very confused because the last thing they remembered, it was working. Now it's not been working for years. What the hell are you talking about? And you slowly see as these resets happen more and more often, the area around them starts breaking down more and more and more. And he's still just trying to figure out how to get by in life, how to spend time with his friends, because he doesn't understand what's causing this. So he's just like,
what is the gameplay to, like, the story seems awesome. I'm curious what the actual, like, what do you do? I'm looking at the screenshots and I have no idea what the hell's happening.
Yeah, most of the time you're walking Mark around the environment, usually just left or right, and clicking A on things to either talk with people, hear what's going on in his mind, or looking at things a little more deeply. Occasionally, you'll have conversations with people, and you get to choose what choice Mark says, and he does it in his own way, so you might see exactly what's being typed out as what you told him to say, and then he'll delete it and start typing something else, and then delete that, and he'll type something else, and finally be like, okay, that's what I'm going to say. But it's in at least somewhat similar vein, kind of sometimes, because sometimes it's like you're trying to get him to just admit to doing something wrong, and he isn't going to admit to doing something wrong, so he starts off writing, like, admitting to it, and then he's like, no, let's write this to where it's less my fault. No. Hey, everything's fine. You know, it's great. And then occasionally you'll get hit in various little tiny mini-games that occasionally happen. Like, one of them that I remember was trying to stab little fish balls that onto a stick so he could eat them. And it was just the stick going across the screen, and you had to click A when it was above one. And then you saw a little meter that went from red to green back to red, and you had to hit it when it was in the green, well, as close to the green as you can, so he would actually stab into the piece of meat to pull it out so he could eat it. Very simple little minigame. Major pain in the ass. There was an achievement for that, for getting all four of them without missing and so hard to do. And then, like, there was another minigame where you're painting and you just click a button on a circle and you follow the circle down until it makes a mark. That's it. That's basically the entirety of the gameplay in this. This is more about just living Mark's life and seeing all the stuff falling apart around him and just basking in the glory of Schadenfreude, really.
Are you trying to stop it? Or are you just existing in...
He's kind of existing in it. He wants to stop it, but he's not exactly what we call smart. So it'd be kind of like if Jacob was suddenly caught in, you know, a time reset thing.
He's actually smart. He's edumacated. I'm not. He's smarter than I am, so.
Okay, it's if both of you were trapped in here, then, you know.
And you were with us.
Oh my god, this is exactly like my erotic novel I've been writing.
I hate my life. So, yeah.
Hey, that's in there, too!
I bet it is. So he's trying to figure it out, but he's mostly leaving it to a young girl, Louise, who is the smartest girl in the school. He's mostly leaving it to her because he's a dumbass, realistically speaking. He's just mostly trying to get by and trying to piece things together himself, but there's no real gameplay related to that. It's mostly just hearing his inner monologue and seeing what he's trying to do to prevent some of the bad things he thinks is going to happen, but may not necessarily be happening, because every reset changes the world in ways he doesn't understand, because he doesn't get the memory of all the days beforehand. So, like, when it resets... Tricky.
I am very interested in this.
Yeah, like when it resets, the change may not be like, oh, this person isn't going to be entering this school as a transfer student anymore. No, it might be, oh...
Well, of course not. They fucking zapped into the space, into static. They're not going to
exactly
show up again.
It might instead be like, oh, this family didn't move here like 2 decades the fuck ago, so everything that had to do with them will have changed and impacted this place in ways your character doesn't know any of that stuff, though. They know their original history and everything that happens from that reset point forward, nothing from the past that's been changed. So you're constantly seeing him dealing with this and not really understanding what's fully going on. And it is very trippy and it's complicated and I don't fully understand it, to be honest. But yeah. It's interesting.
Oh, it's going on my wish list. It's $20. What do you think of it?
I'm for it. It has a very interesting concept behind it, and I rather enjoy slice of life styled stuff sometimes. It's not something I like to have all the time, but I do enjoy it when I go for it. And yeah, I think almost everybody would probably be able to get behind this game. So yeah, I'm totally for it.
Very cool. I don't know how long it is. The store page doesn't mention an end date, but it is on sale for $15.99, so you could save $4 if you want to grab it now.
Yeah, and I think the game's about a 20-hour long game or so. So, yeah, because you do a lot of resets. Yeah.
Next up, Arcade Archives 2, Street Smart, developed and published by Hamster Corporation, released April 22nd, Series X and S and PS5 for $9.99. Street Smart is an action game released by SNK in 1989 in an era where a man's true worth was measured solely by his strength. A lone karate master and a professional wrestler travel across America to prove who's the ultimate street brawler. After teaming up in two-player co-op, you'll face off in a one-versus-two-player showdown. Victory earns you the blessings of the gals. Jacob, did you earn the blessings of the gals?
Occasionally. Not too often, though. So, in Street Smart, it is kind of like a hybrid of a beat-em-up and a fighting game. So to explain how exactly that's working, it's really just like a one-on-one match, but you're moving around like it's a beat 'em up. And you do have moves that you can use against your opponents, and it's pretty much you just beat the person up and then you move to the next round. But what this game also wants you to do is like you're able to like bet money on yourself, or I guess theoretically you could bet it on the other guy. Huh. Never thought about trying to do that. But anyways, yeah, you're supposed to bet it on yourself, and then you'll win the next round, and then, of course, you have more money and stuff like that. And by having more money, guess what you're going to be attracting?
Gals.
No, more problems.
Oh.
Jeez. Didn't you pay attention to the song?
No.
Yeah, well, anyways, yeah, actually, you are going to be attracting more gals. This thing has 1980s written all over it. It honestly feels like somebody was trying to come up with an idea for a Steven Seagal, Jackie Chan movie. And just like, you know, you have these two karate fighting guys. And actually they're not both karate fighting guys. The Asian guy is the one who does martial arts. Kind of racist, but you know, the white guy, he actually does wrestling moves. And he can only do strong attacks. And so, you know, the two of you go through, beat up a bunch of people, and then you have to face off against the big guy, which is, he's kind of like a Vince McMahon kind of thing. And then if you've beaten him up, then you have to face off against each other. Kind of like Double Dragon at the very end, where, you know, Jimmy and Bimmy
fight each other.
I want to call him Bimmy, but I'm just like, that's not right. But yeah, it's like the two of you facing off for that. Like, this one lets you decide who's going to get the cash and the women. And yeah, like, it's interesting. Like, it's definitely one of like those like titles where you could tell like SNK was like trying to experiment with some different ideas here. Like, it's kind of like we know fighting games are coming. We know like we want to make it a bigger thing, but beat 'em ups are still big. How do we like mix the two? It works for what it is. I mean, it's difficult. Don't get me wrong. You definitely should bring in a second player on this one. But at the same time, it doesn't feel like it's anything extraordinary. Like, it's solid. I think there's a reason why we never got a Street Smart 2. You know what I mean?
Amazingly, like, this actually got a number of ports. It got a Genesis version in the 90s. And then it was also on the SNK 40th Anniversary Collection on the PS4.
Yep. Yeah. And surprisingly, when I was looking up, because I was trying to see if like I could find out any information about like the arcade machines and stuff like that, one of the things I found to be really interesting is that this game has like a huge following in South and Central America. Really? A lot of SNK and fighting games, you know, do have. Like, I mean, they do have like huge followings down there, but like if you go on YouTube videos, you're going to find all these people speaking in Spanish and Portuguese, like just talking about like how much they love this game and like theories as to like, does this fit into the King of Fighters universe? Which some people think it does. Like I don't know. It's bizarre. I mean, it's actually not really that bizarre, but it's worth checking out. Like, it's not the greatest beat 'em up, and it's definitely not the best fighter.
But it's a different spin on it.
Yeah, and it's an entertaining time. Like, at the very least, check it out, but I'd say buy it. I mean, like I do with pretty much every single Arcade Archives release.
Yeah.
We need more of this.
We do. We do.
Like, I never heard of the game before this. Like, so obviously, you know, it's good that this series is helping, you know, revitalize it and, you know, introduce it to a whole new generation.
Very true. All right. You gave it a buy it, so I guess we can move on.
Yes.
Great.
All right.
Next game, Floor 9, developed by Room Games, published by Dolores Entertainment, released April 24th as Xbox Play Anywhere, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $5.99. In Floor 9, you find yourself trapped in a mysterious hotel known as Hotel Liminal. To escape, you must identify anomalies on each floor. These anomalies can be anywhere, on the ground, in paintings, or even right in front of your eyes. You must check every corner carefully, as one mistake will send you back to the beginning, to Floor 9. The game offers you a unique blend of eerie atmosphere, puzzle solving, and survival, all wrapped up in a psychologically thrilling experience. If you're interested in checking this one out yourself, Dolores Entertainment was nice enough to hook us up with some spares. Oops. If you type exclamation enter in chat, you can get entered to win a copy, and we'll be giving that away at the end of the show. Bree, tell us about your time with Floor 9.
So this is an anomaly hunting game. You have a baseline hotel floor, floor 9, that you start on. And the very first time you observe it, it'll be normal. You need to memorize the details so you can detect things that are out of place, otherwise known as anomalies. And in this game, you're in a hotel, floor 9, trying to get to the bottom floor. Each time you correctly select whether there is an anomaly in the elevator or not, you move down a floor. If you select incorrectly, the elevator will bring you back to floor 9 and start over. The basic loop of the game is that the elevator doors open, you walk around the floor looking for differences, then return to the elevator to make your selection. It's a little bit spooky, but I wouldn't call this a horror game. You'll see some shadowy figures and some blood from time to time, and even a little audio scare, but I felt like this was really tame. There are 30 anomalies total to find. You might find a door number that's off, a painting that has illuminated windows where there weren't before, a piece of carpet that's sticking up, something moving or making noise that wasn't before, an open door that's usually closed, and so on. And like when you start each round, there's like two things that automatically move. There's like a cleaning lady, and there's someone putting out their dishes from like the room service that they got. Otherwise things shouldn't be moving, and if they are, that's obviously an anomaly. The art was simple realism. There's a little bit of motion, like I mentioned. You have some windows and reflection work that was cool to give the hallway a little more depth. So in short, the graphics were pretty awesome. The audio was well done too. There's really no music to speak of, just the footsteps of your own feet as you walk across the hallway. There is decent directional audio too, like knocking coming from a particular room, or the hum of an air conditioner over by the stairwell exit. Yeah, there's not like a ton to this game. If you've played an anomaly game before, this is very similar. I think some of the nitpicky things I'd say about this, if you've never played an anomaly game, you might not understand what to do in this from a lack of tutorial and minimal instructions. The cursor was also finicky at times, trying to get the elevator door button or to hit the small buttons to change floors. But I also had a good time with this one. It was pretty easy on the achievements. There are two timed achievements for getting to floor 0 within 15 or 5 minutes. Ooh. There's one for finding all the anomalies over time. And that may take a little doing. But there's only 30 anomalies to memorize. So it's a fairly short one. But yeah, I liked it.
All right. Well, it's not an expensive one. It's $6. What do you think?
The graphics were sharp and realistic. The audio work was done well. It's a simple game that's fairly short to beat and get all the achievements. I think it's a really great price for what it is. So I'm going to give this a buy it if you've played these type of games before and like them. A try it if you're new to the anomaly hunting genre. Like, it's not a bad entry into the genre. It's just lacking a little bit of tutorial. So
yeah.
It's right there on the cusp, depending on where you're at with anomaly game. So, gotcha. Yeah.
Well, if you buy it in the next week, you could save $1.20 for $4.79. How about you like that?
Love it.
Perfect. Next up, Survivor Mercs, developed by Wolpertinger Game. Wolpertinger Game. That's, wow. Developed by Wolpertinger Games, published by Snail Games USA, released April 30th on Xbox Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $9.99 in a world threatened by Megacorp's private robot army. The last bastion of hope for mankind is a bunch of armed lunatics who signed up for a mercenary job. Who better than to lead them than a despicable clone with an unpredictable set of special traits? Welcome to your new assignment, Commander. Take the battle to the enemy and build your underfunded, overambitious outfit into an apocalyptic war machine that rids the world of evil billionaire overlords. Oh God, we need that today. With all the chances stacked against you, this isn't about glory. This is about the loot. Jacob, how fun is it to murder billionaires?
It's pretty fun when you actually get to, you know, when you get far enough to be able to do that. So Survivor Mercs is, it's a roguelite, that is, you know, in the Survivors genre. You play as this clone general, and pretty much every single time you die, you just create a new clone. Now you can go back and bring back various versions of yourself if you want to, but that is like resource consuming. So pretty much just get around to playing a new version of it with a new guy, and just unlock better crap this time, scrub. So every single time you're going to start off on the boot camp just to make sure that you understand what you're doing. I don't know if you can actually pass that, but I've never been able to. So I don't know. It's just an extra mission. And then after that, you are presented with this map and it's branching out, and you can decide what kind of situation you're going to find yourself in the next round. Like, it might just be you have to kill 400 enemies within 4 minutes, or you have to grab, you know, as much treasure, as much ammo, as much, or not ammo, but weapons, possibly find other mercenaries who are going to serve with you, all that kind of stuff. That's pretty much what the missions go by, until you have to fight bosses, which you're going to have to do this. I mean, you're going to have to do it throughout the game. There are mini bosses, but there are also end game for that. And usually the mini bosses, they'll help you. If you kill them within a certain amount of time, you'll unlock a new mercenary, new tech, something. But it ends up with a very G.I. Joe kind of feel to it, G.I. Joe, the American Hero cartoon show, kind of feel. Never because heard of it. You're, Well, I mean, it's really underground. Not a lot of people have.
Oh, I heard of it. That's the pork chop sandwiches thing.
Oh, yes. But anyway,
Can you Buzz Lightyear?
Anyway,
I loved your movies.
Shut up. So anyway, as you're moving through this game, you're going to unlock more mercenaries that you can add to your team, so then you can start kicking more ass. And at the end of each failed mission is the best way to put it, but if you succeed, you also get to go back to the base, this time with more stuff, because if you die, then you lose some of the gear that you're able to grab. But with this, you're able to build this underground base for your character. It's for you, but theoretically you can make it for your clone leader guy if you decide that you really need to keep him the whole entire time. But it's stuff they get more XP with every kill, or they're stronger, or you're able to unlock better weapons if you have enough cash and equipment for it. And then you can also look at whatever trophies you've earned. I don't have very many. You can also build up various departments of this underground headquarters, which will allow you to expand out further into the world and hunt down more, bad guys, whether it's megalomaniac dictator, or if it's megalomaniac billionaire whichever one. But yeah, there's plenty of killing to go around in this game. My main issue with it is that the levels are, in my opinion, the levels are way too dang quick. Because what happens is that you really only have like 4 minutes to play on every single level. And then once, like, if you've gone over that time, the enemy starts bombarding like the whole entire map. It's like remember when death comes after you at the, like at the end of like your 20 minutes in Vampire Survivors?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that. Like, you're not going to escape this. Like, and it's just like, I just want to run around and unlock a bunch of shit. Like, could you just stop it with the aerial attacks? Just let me, just let me grab my shit and go. but then what's kind of cool at the end of the level is that to escape the bombardment, you have to make it back to the extraction zone, which, you know, once you do, you're lifted off by helicopter with tons of explosions going on all around you. But yeah, it's fun. Like I'm definitely gonna have to spend more time with it. But I mean, that is kind of par for the course for these types of games.
Yeah.
Like, you really do have to sink like a ton of time into it. Weeks, in fact, I would say. But yeah, like, this is gonna be staying on my Xbox. I'm gonna be keeping to play it. So, if you like the Survivors genre and if you like going pew pew at stuff, I'd recommend it.
Well, clocks in at $10. What is your verdict?
Oh, wow. Yeah, $10. Totally. Definitely pick it up.
Cool beans. Next, a difficult game about letters, developed and published by Abelix Games, released April 22nd on Xbox One and Series X and S for $4.99. When your best friend falls into trouble, it's up to you to embark on a daring journey through the land of letters. In a difficult game about letters, you take control of a character who could transform into any letter of the alphabet. Each letter shape provides unique abilities, which you'll need to solve puzzles, navigate obstacles, and complete challenging platforming levels. Bree, what is a difficult game about letters, and is it difficult?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what I was expecting this game to be about, but I thought crayon art on grid paper had to be something special, whether in quotations or not, so I gave this a try. There is a partly animated intro that explains the main story. The letter B is captured by the question mark king, known as the Ruler of Riddles, who is just a question mark with a crown balanced on his head. The question mark king has caged up most of the whole alphabet in his dungeon, suspended over liquid, and other letters in the letter city find out that their friends are missing and seek to find out what's going on. And the letters must unite to create an unstoppable force to overcome the question mark king and show him that letters are greater than the sum of their parts when they work together as a team. If you've ever seen or read The Phantom Tollbooth, you might get a feel for the kind of cute humor of anthropomorphized letters. But that's as far as that comparison goes. This is a platformer. There are three difficulties: easy, hard, and impossible. Completing any of those unlocks rain mode. Easy gives you checkpoints and a time rewind. Hard removes the rewind. And impossible has neither things, with the descriptor, difficult game about letters. And they're not kidding. You start off as a capital letter A on your search for the letter B and the other captured letters. Again, this is mostly a platformer with some, we'll call them puzzle elements. You press A to jump. Some platforms will have angles to them that change the angle of your letter, and so you use the bumpers to rotate your little letter, and that's the easy stuff. Next, you can use bumpers to change letters to better utilize shapes to get across. Is it bumpers or I don't know? I forget which button it is. Anyway, you're trying to get across obstacles, and you can do that using the triggers. There we go. Y brings up a letter map so you can hand select the letters you use most often in your trigger selectors. And then button-wise, lastly, if you were on easy, you have X to rewind. And you can rewind a couple of seconds, like two-ish times. There's like a little meter that pops up and refills when not in use. And you can strategically pause in places sometimes to refill that meter for difficult sections with balancing or whatnot. So that's what this game's about, for the most part. You platform to different sections, checkpointing along the way at little houses. You try to get to the question mark King's dungeon. You'll find spikes, moving spike obstacles, small diamond-shaped platforms to jump on to get across gaps. You'll find triangles and circles to jump on, and small gaps to squeeze into. Using something like the letter A or R gives you a little teepee to kind of catch on to small platforms like the pointed diamond shapes. Something like the letter I or J gives you a smaller letter to fit into a small space. And then J could also jump a little higher and hook onto things. So you have to strategize and use your letters correctly. Sometimes you'll need to change letters a few times in a short segment in between checkpoints, all while precariously balanced on something, hoping not to fall. This seems hard. It is. This is designed kind of like a rage game. You're constantly running up through challenging obstacles. There is a timer to tell you how long you've been picking at the game and failing. But there was like a lot of no and why and even a little motherfucker coming out of my mouth. And once I tried to say something and just gibberish came out because I was so frustrated with a section. But that's half the fun. The cute crayon aesthetic in the uplifting music somehow make this addictive, or at least it did to me. You can see a little meter of how far you've gotten and how far you still have to go. It is absolutely disheartening to fall to your death and see how far you have and haven't come. And I still kept wanting more. I can't even imagine playing this on anything other than, like, anything harder than hard, because easy was hard enough. Without checkpoints, this game is impossible, in my opinion. Rain mode, I imagine, gives you more of a timer, because the bottom would fill up with water if it's like other rain modes I've seen, where you'll have to race against the clock.
I'll just say now, nobody on True Achievements has even played rain mode yet.
Yeah, so I didn't make it on the game on easy.
There are two achievements that have been achieved on True Achievements. One is, I'm guessing, to view the credits, and the other is to start the game.
Yeah, pretty much. So I would say the one big downside to this game for me was that sometimes I felt like the boundary for platforms would glitch out, and the jump like would glitch or something, or the jump didn't always work when I thought it should. And I might also like if there was a checkpoint save for the game, since I couldn't finish the game in one sitting, and I was a little disappointed that I had to start over when I came back to it. I actually like this game.
Based on the chat I'm seeing, you might be the only one. What are some of the messages I've seen in chat? Fuck this game. The name is not wrong. The game is bullshit. Easy mode is not easy.
It's not easy.
Casuals. A bunch of casuals. $5 verdict.
This game is a difficult game about letters. And if you think you'd like a challenge, I think this is worth a try. The price is great. It does have a few small issues, and I would love to see a way to save. And like I said, some small issues with the jumping from time to time, but there's enough checkpoints when you're on easy. Like, it wasn't any more frustrating than the repeated devs or dying over and over. I was just reading Carnage's message. But yeah, a save feature would be really, really handy. So overall, I'm going to give this a try.
Is it cheap enough for fuck it, why not?
I mean, as long as you understand that you are in for a struggle.
As long as you can read the title of the game and comprehend the words.
I would say fuck it, why not? Yeah. It's a good price.
And you'll probably say fuck a lot while playing it.
Yes, you will. And some other choice words, I'm sure.
Aki can have a fun stream of words with that, but One last game to chat about tonight. We're going to take another look at Metro Exodus, developed by 4A Games, published by Deep Silver. It's available now for $29.99 to a $39.99 for the Gold Edition. Explore the Russian wilderness across vast nonlinear levels and follow a thrilling storyline that spans an entire year through spring, summer, and autumn to the depths of nuclear winter. Aki, you have covered Metro Exodus previously, yes? What has been going on in this game since launch?
Well, it's gotten some DLC, which I believe I also probably talked about back then. But there is a new game coming, and it looks good. It does not seem to be focusing on the main character of all the prior games, necessarily, which is Artyom. It seems to be focusing on someone new this time, which should be interesting. And yeah, so they just wanted us to look at the prior game again and just
with the hype of the new game coming out. How excited are you about the new game? Because I know you're a huge fan of this series.
Overall, I'm really excited for it. However, the trailer did show off like one of my most hated enemies from all of the games.
Oh, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, in one of the DLCs for, I believe, the second game, you played as someone and you ended up fighting not in the metros, but in the overworld, which is a nuclear wasteland at this point, and you had to fight giant ape creatures that were just a massive pain in the fucking ass to kill. They were just the most horrific enemy in the entire game, just because it was not fun to try and kill them. And it appears like they're gonna be back in this game, because that was one of the primary enemies it showed, and I was like, oh man. Fighting them really sucks. A degree that I can't explain. It is horrific. They're bullet sponges, and they're able to get out of bounds, basically, because they'll climb through the walls and up into the ceiling where you can't go, and then they'll drop down behind you and attack you, and they're really fast, and they're really strong, and they take so many bullets to kill. Oh, they're just the worst. But other than that, everything else seemed really cool. They showed off aliens, which I don't think were ever really showed in Exodus at all. And I can't remember if they were shown much in the second game. I'm pretty sure the first game actually introduced them at the very end. I'm not sure if it really showed any in the second game. Maybe the second game introduced them at the very end. It's been a while since I've played the first two games. And yeah, so it seems to be trying to tie everything back together again, because it kind of dropped some stuff in between the games and then brought new stuff in, which kind of made it seem like, oh, was this just, you know, a radiation-filled, you know, fever dream or what? And it seems to be tying everything back together, which is cool. Graphically, it looks fucking awesome. I am super excited for this, but I love the Metro series. So, to be fair, I have the standard games, the Reduxes, on Xbox and on PC. So, yeah.
Well, what more is there to say about the franchise and about Metro Exodus? I know it is, it's available for $30. The Gold Edition is $40. What kind of DLC is included in the Gold Edition?
You have, I believe, two different DLC that focus on other people. One of them focuses on someone named Sam. It's been a while since I've actually played the DLCs, and I didn't get through either of them because I was mostly focusing on the main game. And since I had, I think I reviewed it, I did not get through it because I had a whole bunch of other games too, but I got a good chunk of the way through it. The first two games are very linear games, so you're very much railroaded. You're mostly in this area, and it goes from point A to point B, it's basically a hallway, is kind of how the first two games play. They occasionally open up to slightly larger areas, but it still get from one end of the room to the other end of the room, basically.
But Exodus was more open sandbox, wasn't it?
Yes, it completely changed things up. You had larger open areas, and basically you're running along a train line because you're trying to get somewhere safe, away from the standard metros that y'all have been in this whole time, and you're occasionally stopping out in the middle of fucking nowhere on the surface, and then you have this big open world area that you get to explore, find resources in, find weapons, kill the various mutants around, and then get to the train, get into a mission. That mission is larger, but still fairly linear-ish. And then get back to the train. Rinse and repeat a few times. These areas were like hour-plus long, large areas to be going through. So, especially if you're trying to be stealthy like I am, because you die so easy in the game. It was really fun. I really like it. It gave you a pneumatic gun damn near right off the bat, which is basically think nail gun. It's just a pressurized nail gun. So it's nice and quiet, but you have to pump it up a bunch to make it super strong shot. And that is one of the things I really like about the Metro series, is that when you kill an enemy, if you're not loud about it, no one knows. They might find the body, but they don't know where you are. Unlike a lot of games where the moment you kill somebody, if someone sees that body, they immediately know where you are for some reason, no matter what kind of weapon you used. So Metro series has always been really good about if you're stealthy, they don't know where the fuck you are. And I really appreciate that, because they've always given you a bunch of stealth weapons. In the first game, it was throwing knives, which was like one of my favorite things. And in the second game, they gave you a silenced gun, and eventually the pneumatic gun. And then the third game, you got the pneumatic gun right, I believe, right from the start. You have to fix it at the beginning, but you have it from the start, and it's fucking fantastic. Also, Carnage says that he never got into the Metro series. Shame. Shame. Go replay them and then enjoy them. Do better.
All right. Well, Metro, again, Exodus is available for $30, gold for $40. Your official verdict on Metro Exodus.
I think you should get the gold version just because it comes with the DLC, and I think that after you play the game, you're going to want to get the DLC just get the gold edition. It's 100% worth it. I love this series.
Very good. And with that, we're done. That is it for this episode. Made it through another one.
Yay!
Big thanks for all y'all being here, hanging out. Music this episode, since we covered a difficult game about letters, I found PC Load Letter by the 1UPS taking on Command and Conquer, so I'm going to play that.
Right on.
Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds like
a plan. Keep the 1UPS going. So, final words to end the episode.
Bucky Wucky Choo Choo Train.
You do that too. You need new fallback final words.
Yeah, but
it's just
all right. Old. So, I do have something to talk about at the very end.
Oh, no.
Guess what today is?
Something Thursday. About Disney Dreamlight Valley?
No, not about Disney Dreamlight Valley. Today, 7 years to the date, is when Paramount released the very first Sonic the Hedgehog trailer. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not just saying like first for the movie, but remember what that first model of Sonic the Hedgehog horrific. Looked like.
Oh, yes.
Horrific. Yes. 7 years ago, we had to lay our eyes upon that abomination.
Ugh. Now 7 years later, we get to look at you every week.
No, you don't. Do you? I mean, we.
I look do. At I know what face. You look like.
Oh, yeah. You probably jerk to it.
I'm like a wall of photos in my basement.